I am not entirely made of rock. In my prime, it was said I had the toughest hide of any dragon, and I was certainly among the most powerful. Many dragons challenged me for my kingship, as happens over the centuries, and many dragons died.
How many? Seth asked.
More than I care to remember, Dromeda said. But one mattered more than the rest. My nephew, Ezerod. He was my very favorite in the family. A very interesting dragon with great potential. I helped mentor him. I will confess that I liked him better than my own children, who tended to be fierce but dull. But Ezerod did something my children did not. He attempted to take my crown.
Oh no, Kendra said. How terrible.
I fought him, Dromeda said. I bested him. He would not yield, and so I slew my favorite nephew to maintain my status. I have never been the same.
The Somber Knight told us you gave up the crown, Seth said.
I did, Dromedas acknowledged. I was already disengaging with my position before the fight with Ezerod, but I had a tradition to uphold, and Ezerod had wounded my pride. I won the fight, but it finished me. Not long after my victory, I effortlessly did the unthinkable. I abandoned my crown. I offered it to a dragon who I thought would make a good leader. He accepted, then was killed for the crown 10 years later.
What happened to you after giving up the crown? Kendra asked.
I became an outcast, Dromeda said. My wife forsook me. My children renounced me. My supposed friends rejected me. It came as no shock. I had done the unpardonable for a dragon. I had become a pacifist.
You won't fight? Seth asked. Does that mean you won't eat us?
Probably not, Dromeda said. After slaying my nephew, I decided to stop ending lives. Originally, I had decided never to kill another dragon. Over the years, my conviction has grown. I do not believe in harming other thinking creatures.
Why doesn't a dragon just come and kill you? Seth asked.
Not worth the risk, Dromeda said. Unlike most dragon kings, I was never defeated. Why go up against a shunned, undefeated dragon? There is little glory in slaying an outcast. I never stated that I would not defend myself. Whether I actually would or not remains untested. I live quietly. I cause no trouble. I am disliked. But it is easy to forget me.
Well, I like you, Kendra said.
You have to like me, Dromeda said. You want my help, and you know that I could kill you very easily.
You just hide down here in the dark? Seth asked.
Like your somber knight in some ways, Dromeda said. Except I am not waiting to commit violence. Dragons spend a good deal of time inactive. We are large. It requires great energy to move, even more so as we age.
Don't you get hungry? Seth asked.
Is that a wise question from a tiny bite of food? Dromedas asked. Don't be alarmed. I am not hungry. My dinners are delivered by ogres.
Dragon meal from Terabel, Kendra surmised.
A filling substitute for villagers, Dromeda said. Quite tasty. Many dragons partake, some more quietly than others. Who needs to consume people, cattle, walruses, elephants, whales, or giants? My ogres bring me more food than I can consume. An inactive dragon needs less than you would think. We hibernate efficiently.
Do you even know where we can find the scepter? Seth asked. You weren't clear about that.
The dragon shifted, rocks and boulders rumbling. Are you truly the caretakers? It seems ludicrous. As if Celebrant made a wish and Marat gave up his post for 2 mortal children.
It's complicated, Kendra said. There weren't many options, and Agate was hoping human caretakers would strengthen the magical defenses at Blackwell Keep.
Have the resources of Dragon Watch grown so thin? Dromedas asked.
We're not so bad, Seth complained. Kendra squeezed his hand.
I suppose you're better than nothing, Dromedas said, which is a small compliment indeed. I do know the location of the hidden scepter. Since the sanctuary was founded, you are the first to ask me.
Will you tell us? Kendra asked.
Explain why exactly you want the scepter, Dromeda said.
To protect Blackwell Keep and keep Wormroost from falling, Kendra said.
To what end?
Dromeda asked. To keep the peace, Kendra said, so the dragons won't run wild.
Celebrant is a powerful king, Dromeda said. Don't you think he deserves to rule his own sanctuary?
He helps rule, Kendra said. But look at the history of dragons. If they get free, they will try to take over the world.
Likely true, Dromeda said.
Likely? Seth exclaimed. Have you met a dragon?
Are you sure this boy is one of the caretakers as well?
Dromeda asked Kendra. We're a package deal, Kendra said.
I believe your motives are correct,
Dromeda said.
I believe your intent is sincere. But only a fool gives up something for nothing. What can you offer me?
I thought you were a pacifist, Seth said.
A pacifist need not be a fool,
Dromeda said heavily.
Sometimes pacifists have greater need for strategy than those willing to fight.
Do we have anything that you want? Kendra asked.
Not that you can rightfully give,
Dromeda said.
So it must be promises or services. Promise me this. The next time you have the opportunity to kill a dragon, show as much mercy as possible. Work to save the dragon, not to kill the dragon. Can you make that vow?
You think we'll have a chance to kill a dragon? Seth asked.
You already killed Siletta,
Dromeda said. Seth stared at the ground. You know about that?
Dragons can recognize a dragon slayer,
Dromeda said.
I'm better than most. If you promise to show as much mercy as possible the next time a dragon falls into your power, and if you promise that each of you owes me an additional favor of my choosing, I will reveal the location of the hidden scepter.
I'm going to be running errands for the rest of my life, Seth muttered.
Excuse me?
Dromedas asked. I just owe some other people a favor too, Seth said. They're piling up. Not a favor that makes us betray our duties as caretakers, Kendra clarified.
Nothing that betrays your fundamental morals or duties,
Dromeda said.
But it might be difficult and uncomfortable.
Can I talk about it with Seth? Kendra asked.
Be my guest,
Dromeda said.
If it aids in your deliberations, be aware that this is my only offer.
All right, Kendra said. Seth huddled close to his sister.
You have to do it,
came a voice from his pocket.
You need the scepter. It's not a bad deal.
You can still talk? Seth asked.
Told you I was brave, Calvin said. The dragon is impressive, like a talking mountain.
Calvin is probably right, Kendra said. We just have to find the scepter.
Quieter, Seth said. He can probably hear us.
Every word, Dromedas said. Who is the third party?
My secret ally, Seth said. A hero of great renown.
Have you reached a decision?
Dromedas asked tiredly. Seth looked at his sister.
You're right. We have to do it.
We have a deal, Kendra said to the dragon.
Very well,
Dromedas replied.
I will hold you to it. I am not beyond exacting revenge for broken oaths.
Message received, Seth said. Where do we go?
You must walk the path of dreams,
Dromedas said. Is that an actual place? Seth asked.
The scepter lies at the end of the path,
Dromedas said. And where does the path start? Seth asked. At Wormroost, I hope?
In this chamber,
Dromedas said, shifting again. Boulders ground against one another.
Really? Kendra asked. Right here?
Arcadius built this lair to house me and to hide the start of the Path of Dreams,
Dromedas said.
The path will not be easy to walk. You could lose your lives.
We figured, Seth said. Can we go get a friend? Maybe two? Some people to walk the path with us?
No,
Dromedas said.
The path is meant for caretakers.
What about me?
Calvin asked from Seth's pocket.
I suppose the invisible hero can join you,
Dromedas said.
But only because I'm in an indulgent mood. His size amuses me.
We have a servant, Kendra said, not a person. A limberjack, like a living puppet. Can we...
Only you two and the invisible hero,
Dromedas said.
I control access to the Path of Dreams. Do you wish to try for the scepter or not?
We want to try, Seth said. He glanced at Kendra. Right? She took a deep breath. Yes.
Then back away,
Dromedas said.
I haven't moved this much in centuries. It would be a shame if I accidentally crushed you.
Chapter 21 Path of Dreams. Kendra and Seth retreated through the doorway into the tunnel to give Dromedas plenty of space. From the cavern came all the tumult of an earthquake, accompanied by a gritty dust plume. Seth hurriedly closed the door before the dust became unbearable. The tremendous rumble continued as if the entire cavern were caving in. The ground vibrated beneath their feet. Kendra watched her brother. He looked so young and uncertain, his eyes wide, his hair dusty, the flashlight crammed against one ear, his hand covering the other, trying to mute the thunder of colliding rocks. How had they ended up here? What if this got them killed? Couldn't somebody else handle this crisis? It finally got quiet.
All right, Dromedas
invited.
You may return, young mortals.
With Seth's hand in hers, Kendra pushed through the door. Globes of light now illuminated the cavern. Dust hung in the air. A deep depression in the floor led down to a square hole with a staircase going deeper. It was impressive to think that Dromedas had filled much of that void. The rocky rubble had mostly been shoved to one side of the room, sloping high against the cavern wall. Dromedas loomed on the other side. The way he was curled up, the ancient dragon almost looked like a great heap of stone himself, although the rock patterns of his stony scales were too regular, and the head at the top disrupted the illusion. Dromedas was immense, at least twice the size of Celebrant, and so bulky. Each claw looked big enough to crush a truck.
"You're huge!" Seth exclaimed in awe.
"Our kind tend to grow as we age," Dromedus said. "You mortals shrivel up. Very demeaning."
"Can I walk the path of dreams alone?" Kendra asked.
"Excuse me?" Dromedus asked.
"Why risk both our lives?" Kendra asked.
"No way!" Seth shouted. "If one can go, it's me. You have like zero practice surviving."
"I've survived a lot," Kendra said.
"I appreciate the strategizing," Dromedus said. "But I take it you must be in contact with one another to function as dragon tamers."
"He's good," Seth muttered.
"Then you will need to stay together to walk the path of dreams," Dromedus said. "And you're welcome. That advice gives you a chance."
"Thank you," Kendra said. "Is there anything else we should know?"
"Alas, I do not know the mechanics of the path," Dromedus said. "Arcadius kept the specifics hidden, as wizards do. The unworthy will not survive. Death is likely. Off you go."
Hand in hand, Kendra and Seth climbed down into the depression until they reached the opening where the stairs began. Globes lit the way to the bottom, perhaps 100 steps away. One long flight.
"The path of dreams doesn't sound too bad," Calvin said. "I can sometimes fly in my dreams and breathe underwater."
"We explored a place called the Dreamstone in Australia," Seth said. "It was pretty terrible. Not happy dreams."
"We can do this," Kendra said. "I want to see Mom and Dad again. I want to see Grandma and Grandpa. They're depending on us. We have to do this."
They walked down the stairs. At the bottom, a short hall led to an archway. Engraved runes embellished the walls of the hallway.
"Seth, can you read any of that?" Kendra asked.
"No, can you?"
"None of it," Kendra said.
"Don't ask the Nipsey," Calvin piped up. "He's probably illiterate."
"Can you read it, Calvin?" Seth asked.
"No,"
he replied. Kendra paused at the archway.
"We need to keep hold of each other," she reminded her brother.
"I've held on so far," Seth said.
"Just don't let go," Kendra said. "I don't want to die frozen by fear."
"Stop thinking so much," Seth said, towing her through the archway.
The smallish room was mostly empty. Dimmer globes softly illuminated polished walls of copper embossed with runes and images of fanciful animals. Against one wall stood a long, narrow table with 3 corked bottles on top.
"No other doors," Seth said.
"What's with the bottles?" Kendra wondered.
They crossed to the table. All 3 bottles were made of smoky blue glass and looked old. None had labels.
"Should we drink one?" Seth guessed.
"That seems trusting," Kendra said. "What if they're poison?"
"Maybe one is poison," Seth said, "or 2 of them, and the other lets us go forward."
"At least one of us should make it," Calvin said.
Seth removed Calvin from his pocket. The Nipsey looked up at Seth curiously.
"Maybe you should wait outside," Seth said. "No need for you to risk your life, too."
"Wait, are you joking?"
Calvin asked.
"The main reason lords call their vassals is to go to battle. This is why I'm here, to stand by you when things get bleak. I'm not going to help break any curses if I hide at the first sign of trouble. I'm the tiny hero, right? Not the tiny bystander."
He pointed at the bottles.
"Let me drink first, the one on the left. I have a good feeling about that one. The middle one is an obvious pick, so we should stay away. The right? Most people are right-handed. Wizards would expect folks to reach for the one on the right."
"I'm not sure we should plan on drinking them," Kendra said. "At least not at first. Maybe we could open all three and smell them.
I think she's on to something, Calvin exclaimed. We test if some smell sweeter than others, because the sweet one is probably a trap, especially if it's the middle one.
I'll open the left one first, Seth said, putting Calvin back in his pocket, then picking up the bottle. Kendra, hold my shoulder instead of my hand so I can give it a good pull.
Kendra slid her hand from his grasp and up his arm to the back of his neck, maintaining contact the whole way. Seth grabbed the cork and pulled. Then he changed his grip and pulled again.
It's stuck. Let me try, Kendra said. It doesn't need cooties, Seth protested.
You're going to get punched, Kendra threatened, giving his neck a squeeze.
Settle down, Seth said. He handed her the bottle. I'm pretty sure I loosened it. Good luck.
Seth kept a hand on Kendra's shoulder as she tried to unstop the bottle. There was no give. It was tricky to get a good grip. The cork felt cemented in place. With his free hand, Seth rummaged in his satchel and came out with a pocket knife, then used his teeth to unfold a corkscrew.
I've never used this.
You have a corkscrew?
Kendra asked, handing over the bottle and returning her hand to the back of his neck.
It took me a second to think of it, Seth said. I wasn't sure the knife had one.
He twisted the corkscrew into the cork, then started to pull. His arm trembled.
Let me try, Kendra said.
It's coming,
Seth said through gritted teeth. A moment later, the cork popped off, and greenish smoke began to geyser from the bottle's mouth at an alarming rate. After momentarily fumbling with the bottle, Seth aimed the mouth so the smoke gushed away from them.
Put it down!
Kendra shrieked, letting go of Seth.
Hold your breath!
He hurriedly replaced the bottle on the table. Kendra grabbed his hand and yanked him back toward the archway. Green smoke continued to fountain upward, spreading across the ceiling in flowing ripples. Kendra and Seth ran out of the archway and turned to watch. Soon the smoke clouding the air made it impossible to see the bottle, but they could still hear it hissing out. The smoke stopped at the archway, as if encountering an unseen barrier. Before long, the archway held back a swirling wall of green fog from top to bottom. Kendra could see no more than a couple of inches into the room.
"Now what?" she asked. "When the gas first started, I thought it might be a message," Seth said. "Patton once left one that way."
"Looks more like a trap," Kendra said.
"Maybe it will clear out," Seth said. "Let's give it some time."
They waited.
"I don't hear the bottle hissing anymore," Seth observed.
"The smoke looks just as thick," Kendra said.
"Maybe we should hold our breath and try to get the other two bottles," Seth suggested.
"It won't be easy," Kendra said. "We won't be able to see in there."
"Usually smoke is thinner near the ground,"
Calvin said, his little head poking out of Seth's pocket.
"But this looks thick all the way down."
"What if we open another bottle and it's more smoke?" Kendra asked.
"We retreat up the stairs," Seth said.
"Let me test it out," Calvin offered. "I don't trust those fumes. Let me hold my breath and run in there a little ways, then come back out."
"No, I'll do it," Seth said. "I didn't see any dragons in there. When Kendra let go of me, I didn't freeze up. I'll make a run for the bottles alone."
"Not alone," Kendra said. "If you're going, I'm going too."
"How does that make sense?" Seth asked.
"Why risk both of us?"
"Because Dromedus warned us that we'd die if we didn't stay together," Kendra reminded him.
"What if you run in there alone and then we can't find each other?"
"Hey!"
Seth shouted, pointing. Kendra followed his finger to where Calvin was dashing across the floor toward the archway.
"How'd he get down?" Kendra asked.
Seth let go of Kendra and ran after the Nipsey, but Calvin had too much of a head start and raced into the green haze before Seth arrived. Kneeling at the archway, Seth reached blindly into the smoke, feeling around, but soon withdrew his arm.
"He's gone," Seth said. "He's sneaky and fast. He must have climbed down my leg from my pocket."
"Hopefully he'll be right back," Kendra said.
"He better be," Seth said. "He just disobeyed an order from his leader."
Kendra rolled her eyes. "You'd never dream of disobeying an order, especially when you think you're right."
"Calvin!" Seth called. "That's long enough! Can you hear me? Come back!"
They stared at the green smoke and listened to the silence.
"Oh no," Kendra said.
"Calvin!" Seth tried again. "Can you hear me? Are you lost? Follow my voice! Answer if you can!"
They waited.
"He's not coming back," Kendra said. "He said he was just going in a few steps and right back out."
"And what have we learned?" Seth complained. "Nothing! Did he accidentally take a breath? Is he dead?"
"All we know is the smoke is dangerous," Kendra said.
Seth stared at the archway, hands on his hips.
"We have to try for another bottle. What else can we do?"
"I guess we could leave," Kendra said.
"Can we really?" Seth asked. "Can we leave behind the scepter? Leave behind Calvin? Just go back to Blackwell Keep with nothing? What if Celebrant knows we're here? What if he figures out what we're after? What if he sends somebody to get the scepter tomorrow or tonight? What if someone is on their way right now? I wonder if anyone has lost a preserve just 2 days after becoming caretaker."
"Those are good points," Kendra said. "But if Celebrant knows we're here, what if we get the scepter and he steals it from us on the way back?"
"We can worry about that once we have the scepter," Seth said. "We'll talk to Henrik and be as sneaky as we can. But first we need to get it. We can't lead Celebrant to the hidden scepter and then leave it behind."
"Maybe he didn't have us followed," Kendra said. "We never saw any dragons after Terabel. Maybe we're about to die from a poison cloud for no reason."
"We hold our breath," Seth said, taking Kendra's hand. "In and out. Run to the table. We each grab a bottle, and we run out. No breathing."
"I guess," Kendra said uncertainly. "Seth, are you sure?"
"I'm not sure we'll make it," Seth said. "But I'm sure we have to try."
Kendra sighed in resignation.
"Okay, I'm in. Are you ready?"
"Breathe slowly, then take a deep breath and hold it," Seth advised. "3, he breathed in and out. 2,
Kendra breathed in and out with him.
1,
they breathed in. Seth gave a nod. Holding his hand tightly, Kendra let him lead her into the smoky room. The dense fumes irritated her eyes, so she closed them. All she saw with them open was green. Kendra had not traveled many steps before she began to feel lightheaded. She stumbled and barely caught herself. She felt Seth stumble as well. The floor seemed to tilt. She became dizzy. This wasn't going to work. She tugged Seth back toward the door. He yanked her in a different direction, almost making her fall. Still clutching Seth's hand, Kendra remained still. She had lost her orientation. Maybe they could find a wall and work their way back to the door. How long could she keep holding her breath? It was already becoming a struggle. The floor seemed to swing out from under her. Kendra felt like she was floating. It was peaceful. She opened her eyes. The green smoke no longer irritated them. She realized she was breathing. The smoke didn't bother her lungs. It smelled kind of good. Once again, the soles of her feet pressed against the floor. And then the smoke dissolved. It didn't blow away. It just rapidly dissipated to nothing. She stood in a long room paneled with dark wood and full of coffins. Melting candles provided gentle light. The disturbing containers rested on tables and stood up against the walls. All were closed. Kendra could still feel Seth's hand in hers, but he was gone. Or invisible? She reached for him with her free hand. She couldn't feel him, not his body, not his arm, but she could still feel his hand in hers. Kendra squeezed tightly. He squeezed back.
"Seth?" Kendra asked quietly, not daring to yell. "Can you hear me?"
There came no reply. But his hand remained in hers. That was something.
What had happened? Was this a dream?
It looked and felt very real. She felt extra alert rather than asleep. But how did she get here? What if the coffins started to open? Kendra wasn't sure if she could handle it. The room had no windows or doors, unless perhaps they were hidden behind coffins. The walls and furniture were clean, but the coffins looked old, and the air smelled vaguely of perfume. Something about the scent made her suspect it was barely masking unpleasant odors. The coffins remained shut.
"Hello?" Kendra asked. "Is anyone here?"
There came no answer.
What was she supposed to do?
Her eyes were drawn to the nearest coffin resting on the table. Dare she look inside? What if it contained a monster? What if she started a chain reaction and zombies attacked from every side? She glanced at an empty corner of the room. Maybe she should go sit down. Did she have to peek inside a coffin? Was that necessary? But she needed to find the scepter, and Seth, and Calvin. Would sitting still do any good? Probably not. She had chosen to walk the path of dreams. This was probably all part of it. Kendra approached the nearest coffin and rested her free hand on the lid. She surveyed the room. How many coffins in total? 50? Maybe 60. Lots of them stood upright against the walls, like sarcophagi. Would bodies tumble out if she opened those? At least this coffin was lying flat. She wanted to lift the lid, but couldn't quite bring herself to do it. What if there was a skeleton inside? Or a putrid corpse? Or a vampire? She supposed that if the coffins were full of enemies, they would attack sooner or later. She might as well find out. Squeezing Seth's hand tighter with one hand, Kendra pushed up the lid all the way, then gasped and stepped back, tears filling her eyes. It wasn't fair. Inside the coffin rested her Grandpa Larson, eyes closed, looking just as he had when she had attended his funeral, down to the clothes and the hairstyle. At the time, Kendra had not known she was viewing a duplicate body created by a sting bulb. The sight brought an unwelcome wave of emotion. Kendra closed the lid. She stood motionless for a moment, trying to recover from the sight. Squeezing Seth's unseen hand, she took a steadying breath. Now she knew this was at least partially a dream. She had left Grandpa Larson back at Fablehaven, safe and sound, right? That could not really be him in the coffin. But it had looked exactly like him. Kendra approached another coffin, lifted the lid, and found Grandma Larson inside. It was less surprising this time, but not much less disturbing. What was the point of this place? To torture her? Where was Seth right now? She assumed he could feel her hand. Was he experiencing his own twisted nightmare? She went to the next coffin, lifted the lid, and stared at the corpse of Grandpa Sorensen. She had never seen him dead before, but this was exactly how he would look. She told herself he was safe at Blackwell Keep. He was fine. But the sight was still horrible. Kendra poked his side. She didn't like the feel. Too rigid. Unnatural. She wasn't sure how a dead body was supposed to feel. She had never poked one before. The next coffin held Grandma Sorensen. She knew by now to expect dead people she loved, but there is no way to really get used to it. The next lid she opened revealed Seth. Her stomach clenched. He looked so authentic and dead. But she was still holding his invisible, disembodied hand, so she trusted that he was alive. Lifting another lid revealed Coulter Dixon, their old friend whom Growlithe the demon had killed. This created a different horror inside Kendra, because he was actually dead. Clenching her teeth, Kendra closed the lid and began to speed through coffins. She opened each one, glanced at the person, then moved on. She tried not to feel shock. She tried to pretend she was at a wax museum looking at fakes, because it was fake. It had to be. But it looked perfectly real, and she felt completely awake. Mom, Dad, Warren, Tanu, Lena, Patton. No matter what she told herself, each new corpse made an impact. She considered stopping, but what if one of the coffins held the scepter? She had to make sure. She had finished the coffins on the tables. The majority of the grim containers stood upright. Kendra decided to systematically make her way around the room. The first upright coffin she carefully opened held Vanessa. Her body did not tumble forward. She looked just as dead as everyone else, except she stood with no problem. Maybe they used hidden straps? Kendra made her way along the wall. Dale, Trask, Agad, Maddox, her friend Alyssa from school, her friend Brittany, Mara from Lost Mesa, Berrigan from Obsidian Waste. After closing each upright coffin, Kendra peeked around the back to make sure it wasn't covering a door or a window. So far, all she had seen was more wall. As Kendra progressed, the corpses remained familiar, but they were people she knew less well. Former teachers, acquaintances, people she had met while adventuring. She tried to brace herself to find Bracken, but he kept not appearing. When Kendra came to a full-length mirror between two upright coffins, she was startled by her reflection. It was definitely her, but she looked older, more adult. She was taller and somewhat curvier, with more adult features. She looked gorgeous. Glancing down at herself, Kendra saw that her body didn't match the maturity of the reflection. Not even the clothes were right. Kendra contemplated the coffins. Was this supposed to represent her future? Was she going to outlive everybody? A sudden thought jolted her. She had considered becoming an Eternal. The enchantment given to mortals would grant her a long life, and in return, the new demon prison would not be able to be unlocked while she and the other Eternals remained alive. Chills tingled down her back and spread across her shoulders. Was this room demonstrating her fate if she became an Eternal? To watch her loved ones die? Or were they all going to die before her for other reasons? Kendra shook her head. She was giving this horrible place too much credibility. It was just scary nonsense. None of this meant anything. Leaving the mirror behind, Kendra opened more coffins and discovered more dead acquaintances. Soon she was down to the last unexplored side of the room. As she worked her way along the row, Kendra noticed her feet squishing in mud. She paused. Hadn't it been a wooden floor, similar to the walls? She felt sure it had been. But now the entire floor was covered in dark brown mud. Stepping forward to the next coffin, Kendra sank beyond her ankles. By the next coffin, the mud was at her shins. 5 left. The nearest coffin contained Aunt Zola, who had dropped off Knox and Tess before going on vacation with Kendra's parents. 4 left. Kendra slogged to the next coffin, the mud feeling softer as she sank deeper, almost to her knees. She opened the lid to reveal Uncle Pete, Zola's husband. 3 left. Every step was a chore as the mud overtopped her knees. Kendra pulled open the next coffin to reveal Knox. 2 left. Kendra plunged deeper with each step, pushing forward through the increasingly soupy mud. When she reached the second-to-last coffin, Kendra had sunk to her waist, making the coffin seem much taller. She continued to slowly sink as if standing in quicksand. She pulled open the coffin to view Tess, her young features pale in death. Tess was the youngest corpse Kendra had seen, and even after being somewhat numbed by viewing so many familiar cadavers in rapid succession, the sight of her dead little cousin stabbed Kendra with new pain. Tess was supposed to be running around the yard chasing fairies. What sicko had created this horrible place? 1 left. After closing the coffin, Kendra waded forward. She sank quickly to her shoulders, and her movements felt more like treading water than wading. Her feet no longer encountered any firmness beneath them, so she kicked instead of stepped and stroked with her arms. It was like swimming in glue. Kendra made sure to keep hold of the invisible hand, but she was beginning to really flounder. She could barely keep her head above the mud. With a desperate lunge, Kendra grabbed the bottom of the final upright coffin. For a moment, she clung to it, catching her breath. Then she pulled it open to reveal nothing. No body. No shape to the inside of the container. Just darkness. Kendra was no longer used to the impenetrable blackness she was seeing. Nothing was completely dark to her anymore unless she closed her eyes. One thing was certain. She needed to get out of this mud before she drowned. Despite the mushy surroundings, none of the coffins or other furniture in the room were sinking at all. It seemed the mud specifically wanted her. Kendra boosted herself up into the empty coffin, her body slurping out of the muck. Reaching into the darkness, Kendra felt no back to the coffin. Was this what she had been looking for? Some kind of secret passage? A way out? Why was it so perfectly dark? She could still see nothing. Rising, still clinging to Seth's invisible hand, Kendra stepped into the blackness. She could not feel the ground beneath her feet, but she wasn't falling, just sort of floating along. It was so dark she felt blind. From behind, she seemed to hear the voices of her friends and family calling to her. But that didn't seem very likely. Not in this place. She had just seen them, and they were all dead. Chapter 22 Banquet. Seth saw only green fog. He couldn't glimpse his own hand until it nearly touched his face. The room seemed to be spinning. He felt woozy. All sense of direction was gone. But he had to find the other two bottles. He had to grab them and get out. Kendra hauled him in one direction. He tugged the other way,
but he was no longer sure if he was heading toward the table with the bottles, back toward the archway, or toward an empty corner. Seth tried to keep walking, but his feet no longer seemed to touch the ground. He pedaled in the air, floating along inside a green haze, gripping Kendra's hand tightly. And then he felt the floor again. The green smoke disintegrated. Seth stood in the middle of a banquet hall with a parquet floor and a coffered ceiling, dimly lit by candles and huge chandeliers. A pair of incredibly long tables stretched the length of the room, one on each side of him. Dozens of shadowy diners ate and murmured. Liveried servants whisked away empty plates and platters as quickly as they replenished food and tableware. Nobody seemed to pay Seth any mind. He still held Kendra's hand, but she wasn't visible. He found he could move his arm freely, as if her hand were no longer connected to her. He tested the air around her invisible hand, but could feel no other part of her body. The grip of the hand temporarily tightened, and he squeezed back.
"Kendra,"
he whispered. She did not reply. All he had was the feel of her hand. The odd scene produced more questions than answers. Had he teleported here? Was it really happening? Could it be a dream? Why could he feel Kendra's hand, but not the rest of her? And then Seth knew something. There was someone behind him. Since the banquet hall had materialized out of the mist, he hadn't turned around, and he felt certain somebody was there. Somebody besides the oblivious diners and servants. Somebody bad. Part of him didn't want to look. Part of him wondered if he could walk over to one of the tables and blend in with the guests. But he turned around. A demon stood at the far end of the room. He was the only other person in the hall not serving or eating the feast. He stared directly at Seth. The demon had a head vaguely like a wolf, but with darker, oilier fur and glowing red eyes. The height of a man, he wore a cloak that hid most of his body, except for his rat-like hands and feet. Seth had never met this demon before, but there was a strange familiarity. He knew his kind. The demon did not look away. Steeling himself against showing any fear, Seth approached the demon. He stopped, just out of reach.
"Seth Sorensen,"
the demon said, revealing an alarming array of sharp, twisted teeth. Seth wondered if there were orthodontists for wolves.
"We finally meet."
"You know me?" Seth asked.
"We all know you,"
the demon said. "All the wolf people who lurk around at parties?" Seth asked.
"I am Talazar," the demon said. "I suspect we can form a mutually beneficial relationship."
"Let me guess," Seth said. "Demon?"
"Indeed," Talazar said.
"I'm done with demons," Seth said.
"How can that be?" Talazar asked calmly. "You are a shadow charmer. You are part of the family."
"I'm no demon," Seth said.
"You need a mentor," Talazar said.
"Do you know what I did to my last one?" Seth asked.
"Growlithe was on his way out," Talazar said. "You helped him along. Any mentor who falls to his protege deserves what he gets. The elite among us have all destroyed some of our teachers."
"You want to help me even though I killed the last demon who helped me?" Seth asked.
"Growlithe betrayed you," Talazar said.
"You won't betray me?" Seth asked.
"Only if you let me," Talazar replied.
"What if I kill you?" Seth asked.
"Try if you must," Talazar said. "But don't fail. You won't like what follows."
Seth tried not to let the threat chill him. Might be smarter to stay away from each other.
Not if you want the scepter,
Talazar said casually. What do you know about it? Seth asked.
Enough, Talazar said. And I know you're wandering blind in regard to your abilities. So much lies dormant. You could do so much more. Be so much more.
I've made deals with demons before, Seth said. Never again. I'm serious.
You might be serious, Talazar said. But are you right? The dragons are a major threat. You can't stand against them alone. You're hopelessly overmatched. Demons and dragons are not friends. I could help you.
No way, Seth said. You'll help until you betray me.
Don't let betrayal become advantageous to me, Talazar said. Follow a few simple principles, and we could both greatly benefit from a partnership.
Growlithe killed my friend, Seth said, trying not to tear up. The anger and grief were overpowering. It took a moment before he could speak again. I won't risk that happening again.
Your emotions are tangled, Talazar said. Did your dealings with Growlithe contribute to the death of a friend? Perhaps. But how many people would have died without that partnership? Would you still be alive? What about your sister?
Seth thought about it. Without Growlithe, he might never have recovered the unicorn horn from the centaurs, which could have meant Kendra and many of their friends would have died the last time they came to Wormroost. Could they have possibly defeated the dragon Saletta without the horn? No Growlithe also might have meant no Vasilis, which could have meant the demons might have won the Battle of Zizix. Gritting his teeth, Seth growled.
You demons always turn things around.
We see clearly and speak accurately, Talazar said. Most people find it very disorienting.
Meanwhile, you try to take over the world, Seth said. You kill and lie and betray.
When it suits our aims, I suppose, Talazar acknowledged.
I don't need or want your help, Seth said. He looked around the busy banquet hall. How do I get out of here?
That would be helping, Talazar said.
I'll take a hint just this once, Seth offered.
I can do more than hint, Talazar said. How would you like to know what else you can do as a shadow charmer? I can help you activate new abilities right now. How would you like to walk out of here, holding the scepter?
I guess that would be nice, Seth said hesitantly.
Easy, Talazar said. Enter into an agreement with me. Your former sponsor is dead. Accept me as your new sponsor, and the scepter is yours.
What exactly would that mean? Seth asked.
It would mean you and your sister will survive the Path of Dreams, Talazar said. Then I'll help you devise a strategy to return the scepter back to Blackwell Keep.
But what would I have to do if you were my sponsor? Seth asked.
You would come visit me in the flesh, Talazar said, and you would be ready to answer when I call. I'll do favors for you, and you'll do some for me.
Isn't this already a visit? Seth asked.
This is a dream space, Talazar said. We're not physically together at the moment. We're inside a powerful construct produced by extremely talented wizards. What you say and do is binding. Sustain an injury here, and you'll actually be hurt. Die here, and you're dead.
How did you get here? Seth asked.
Once you came here, your mind provided access to me, Talazar said. This dream space forms scenarios in connection with those who visit.
Do you have the scepter? Seth asked.
I know how to get it, Talazar said. I can guide you.
Seth hesitated for a moment.
It would be nice to have help finding the scepter. It would be useful to learn new Shadow Charmer abilities. Much of what Talazar was proposing sounded reasonable.
But Growlithe had sounded reasonable, too.
Demons could be very convincing. That didn't mean they were trustworthy. Seth had learned that the hard way.
"I'd rather find it on my own," Seth said.
"As you wish," Talazar said, drawing his cloak more snugly around himself.
"Are you going to attack me?" Seth asked.
"If I wanted you dead, we would not be talking," Talazar said. "I am not in the habit of repeating offers. However, if you decide you could use help, please feel at liberty to seek me in the real world, assuming you survive this dream space."
Talazar glanced beyond Seth.
"Keep an eye on this lot. Always eating, never satisfied."
For a moment, all went dark. When Seth could see again, Talazar was gone, and the banquet hall was silent. No more mumbled conversations, no more silverware clinking against china, no more hurried footsteps of servants. Talazar had conversed with him at the end of the great hall, so Seth had his back to the two long tables. He reluctantly turned around. Nobody was eating. No servants were in motion. Everyone had frozen in their positions, some sitting, others standing, and every pair of eyes was on Seth. He was unsure whether the people had transformed or whether it was just that he had never taken a close look. Now he could see that they were all undead, though not as shadowy as wraiths or as mindless as zombies. All of the corpses looked dried out, with a hint of intelligence in their gazes. As one, the undead revelers and servants began slowly moving in his direction. Chairs slid back. Figures stood and turned. The entire assemblage inched deliberately toward Seth. Waves of fear began to wash over Seth, a troubling iciness that slithered across the surface of his skin, but failed to penetrate inside. Seth recalled experiences when undead beings had utterly paralyzed him with fright, but since he had become a Shadow Charmer, none had succeeded, though he was sure he had never felt this raw volume of fear projected in his direction. Each figure in the room seemed to generate as much fear as the revenant he once faced. He clung to Kendra's hand. He needed a way out. The undead assembly advanced so slowly that it felt like weird performance art. Still, even without speeding up, they would eventually corner him. There had to be at least 100 of them. If they increased their pace, he would fall prey to them in a matter of moments. Scanning the walls, Seth saw no windows or doors, but nearby, right behind where Talazar had stood, hung some velvet drapery. Racing to the curtain, Seth heaved it aside to reveal a door. He seized the handle and found it locked. Desperate, Seth jiggled and pulled with all he had, but the door refused to budge. He fingered a large keyhole. Did Talazar have the key, or was it someplace else? The undead continued to approach in slow motion. From where he stood, Seth searched the area. His eyes felt drawn to a large key dangling from the neck of a withered, aristocratic-looking woman toward the center of the banquet hall. Seth surveyed the rest of the undead, but noticed no other keys. His eyes kept returning to the desiccated noblewoman. That key looked about the right size. Seth decided he had to get it. If the undead party guests started moving at a normal speed, this would not end well. But if he didn't unlock the door, it would end badly for sure. He had to try. Seth raced forward. The undead crowd continued to move with uncanny slowness. Seth weaved through the group, ducking and dodging to avoid grasping hands. He had experienced dreams in which he moved with syrupy slowness.